the Deco Retro program here on Planet FM. We will bring you interesting interviews, updates of future deco, modern, retro, and other related events. Also the stories that celebrate New Zealand's history and its people, as well as book reviews and other snippets capturing the glamour and fascination of a bygone era.
Deco Retro, Deco Retro.
Good afternoon, listeners. This is Nancy on the Deco Retro program. Recently, I was up in the Hokianga area of Northland, New Zealand, crossing on the car ferry from the delightful little township of Rāwini to Kohukohu. Getting off the ferry, I turned sharp left and headed up into a very remote area of Northland. I was in search of St. Mary's Church, Motuti, where the remains of Bishop Pompalia are lying. This is an interesting story which I will proceed to tell you about. Bishop Pompalia was born in Lyon, France, and ordained a priest in 1829. In 1836, he was consecrated a bishop in Rome and appointed Vicar Apostolic of Western Oceania. The bishop and two assistant Marist brothers sailed up the Hokianga Harbour on the 10th of January 1838. They were welcomed by the Irish-born Thomas Poynton and his wife. It was in Poynton's home at Totara Point the first Catholic Mass was celebrated on January the 13th, 1838. Bishop Pompalia and his faithful Marist brothers established missions in Hokianga, Korokoriko, Mangakahia, Kaipara, Tauranga, Akaroa, Matamata, Opotiki, Makatu, Auckland, Otago, Wellington, Otaki, Rotorua and Whakatane. Pompalia was particularly revered by the Maori people of Hokianga and elsewhere. He was sympathetic to their concerns and had an enlightened attitude towards Maori culture. He treated native people with respect, cordiality and esteem. The bishop exchanged the following dialogue with an elder Maori chief. I don't know about your love for me, but I know about my love for you, because I left my country, my land and family for you. Pompalia was present at the signing of the Treaty of Waitangi. He pushed for a guaranteed freedom of all religions in New Zealand, which is particularly relevant after the dreadful happenings in Christchurch a few weeks ago. Through the 1840s, he was based in Auckland, and in Ponsonby there is a street named after him, Pompalia Terrace. In 1868, old and ill, he returned to France, where he died in Puteaux, near Paris, and because of the times was buried in almost a pauper's grave, but later was interned inside a church there. In the 1990s, many voices began to call for the return of the bishop to New Zealand, and in 2001, the New Zealand Catholic bishops announced that the dream would be fulfilled, thanks to the consent and cooperation of the Pompalia family and the bishops of France. I am here today in Motuti, Northland, at St. Mary's Church, and we are going to talk to Sister Magdalene Sean, one of the Sisters of Compassion, who accompanied the group on the journey to bring Bishop Pompalia back to New Zealand. Good morning, Sister Magdalene.
Good morning, Nancy.
Now, Sister, Bishop Pompalia was very, very well thought of in Aotearoa, wasn't he? He established, I would say, possibly the first missions in Northland, and not only in Northland, but all around the North Island.
Kia ora, Nancy. Yes, when Bishop arrived in 1838, on the 10th of January, there were already Catholic Māori here. Thomas Poynton, Thomas and Mary Poynton had gone over regularly to Sydney, and part of their request when they took their children for baptism over there was for a Catholic priest. they weren't the only ones to intercede on behalf for Catholicity to be brought to these islands. Peter Dillon, who was a captain, had visited quite frequently, and he brought Marsden's missionaries, Kendall, and I've forgotten the other one, out first, and on the active in 1814. He had also found the wreck of the La Perouse, and because of this, the French had given him awards and also an annuity. And so he became friends with the rector of the Irish college over there in France. And so through him, he was able to make contact with a bishop who was very involved in the missionary aspect of the church at the time. And so he was putting in petitions too for missionaries, not only for New Zealand but for the South Seas. So we have Peter Dillon and Thomas Poynton, who made, the latter made Bishop welcome and gave him his cottage.
Sister, who exactly were the Poyntons? They were obviously a very important family in New Zealand or in Northland at that time.
Poynton was a trader. He was Irish and had come out to Australia. And also he'd married an Australian woman over there. And then they came out. They were trading on the coast there and had property at Tuatara Point. And so they made Bishop welcome, gave him their cottage. And then they also gave Bishop some land at Papakoa, which is near Omanaya. And there... a cottage was built. But after some time, Bishop realised that this wasn't in an area which was populated by people. And so when he got reinforcements, which didn't arrive until July of 1839, then he bought land over at Kororarika. And in the September, he bought some land from the Kaumatua, Kiri, and another two chiefs at Purako, which isn't very far from here.
Did he have, you know, quite a lot of funding from the Rome or the Catholic people, well, orders, and you know, back in Rome and France, or was it a struggle, or was money sort of, you know, very happily allocated to New Zealand?
In the early 1800s, I think about 1815, around that area, Pauline Jericho, who was the daughter of a silk merchant, actually started a group and for the propagation of the faith, it was called. And that was in Lyon in France, yes. And this group raised funds for missionaries who were going out to the various places in the, throughout the world. When Bishop and the Marists left Le Havre on Christmas Eve of 1836, there were three missionary groups going out on different ships. There was Bishop Blanc going out to America with about 40 missionaries on board. I'm not sure where the other missionary group was going, but they're actually mentioned in writings. So these people were being funded. But what happened was, as they left the harbour master had put a cable because the ships hadn't been able to move. They were supposed to leave in October, and this was December the 24th. So the harbour master had put a cable across to keep the ships from all leaving at once. And that cable, when he had let it go, went round the rudder of the Delphine.
Oh my gosh, that bishop and carrying his arm.
Yes. Mm. Now, they ran into quite a severe storm, and the Delphine with Bishop and the Marists, and it pulled into an English port the Josephine were the people for America pulled into a French port, and the other ones stood out at sea, but there were actually 12 ships that sank that day.
Oh, my God.
Out in the English Channel.
Goodness sake.
Mm. So, I mean, it was pretty tough in those days travelling.
Yeah.
And Bishop and some of them were seasick at that time, and it took a while for them to get their sea legs.
Initially, they didn't come straight to New Zealand, didn't they go to, was it Chile or South America, wasn't it? And then on to Hawaii and then sort of Australia and then down here, wasn't it?
Yes, they had to call on to the Sandwich Islands, and of course that was 50 days delay there. And then they went to Valparaiso and on down to Tahiti. At Valparaiso, I think that's where they changed, and Bishop was denied travel on a boat because that was coming straight to New Zealand because they were Catholic. So I think this was building up to the picture that he set at Waitangi, because I'm very conscious at the moment of Bishop's role at Waitangi. Because of his asking that the faiths, that there be freedom of religion. And with these events in Christchurch recently, very conscious of that. It isn't the only time, but it is a time in our you know, presence when this has been ignored and there's hate.
Yes, I'm just going to ask you to talk a little bit about that treaty. I read that he actually went across there, was it when they were negotiating the treaty in 1840? But he was ill at ease. He wasn't that welcomed, was he, there? They didn't really want him there, I don't think.
On the 30th of January of 1840, Felton Matthew, who was with Captain Hobson, and he was the acting Surveyor General for Hobson, wrote to his wife and said that the bishop had come and asked, because there was a man on board a ship and who had severe scurvy, and the captain wouldn't discharge him or let him leave the ship. And Bishop's request to Captain Hobson was, could he bring him to his house so that he could get proper care and that he might recover? And so Felton Matthew was saying to his wife, there was no mention of nationality or religion. I have a great reverence for this man, or something in those words.
Okay. Yes.
So this is just prior to the treaty. Bishop was there on the 5th and again on the 6th. And just prior to the signing, he asked the governor for freedom of religion. And so the Reverend Williams was asked to write it down. And at this time, Colenso asked if they could also add Māori custom, Māori reddinga. And so Williams wasn't very keen on it, according to Hobson, but he did put it in. And so even though it's not part of the official treaty, it was made as, with Tim Watkins reports, you know, that it was a moral, morally it should be obliged, binding, because it was given to an oral people in an oral form.
Yes, it's something that we should think about now with what has happened down in Christchurch, you know, freedom of religion. Anyway, there was a great man already thinking of that in those early, early years. Sister, we're sort of, I've got a certain length of time. What I would like to move on to now is bringing him back to New Zealand. He got very sick in New Zealand. I'm not sure which year, 18, what would it be, the 60s, 1860. And he went back to France, where he passed away. and was sort of buried very quickly. And then would you like to tell us what happened to in New Zealand many years later about people wanting him to come back and rest in his, you know, place in the, at the Hokianga?
Yes, I'm not sure about him being very sick, but at that stage. But on the way home, he mentions in a letter in 1868 to Father Walter MacDonald back here that there was a lot of yellow fever at the various ports they were calling, and among religious that he was ministering to. And then he says that there was a young man, a Frenchman, that he was ministering to who actually died on the ship of yellow fever. And then after that, he was ill. When he returned to France, he had a relapse. And so I think any hope of him coming back at that stage, I think, was
Also, funding had sort of wasn't coming into New Zealand, was it? And I think it was still very hard for him to continue his work on here, wasn't it? And that's why he sort of went back to France, I think, intending to come back, but as you say, got pretty ill and then passed away. I'd like to move on now to bringing him back to New Zealand, how you were involved in it, how it came about, because it's actually a very wonderful story, I think.
Bishop died in December of 1871. Now, this was the end of the Franco-Prussian War, also the civil uprisings in France, in Paris especially. And so he died one day and was buried the next in a pauper's grave because of the difficulties of the time. About 12 years later, Bishop was offered a tomb, and so at that stage, we think that that's when Bishop was given a lead-lined casket. Now, news of his death didn't reach New Zealand until April, in the middle of April, which seems unreal to us today.
Yes.
But that was not for those days because of the travel. People kept the memory alive of Bishop Pompalia because he travelled vastly throughout the country, and especially throughout Hokianga in the early years. Of course, then when he'd come back in 1840, in the 1850s, he was based in Auckland, so his time was taken up with the ministry there. But he did come north in 1865. The memory was kept alive in the names, so the name was handed down through the ages. In 1977, Wiki Hōtere, it was from Miti Miti, gathered a group in Auckland, and they formed a committee, Te Kamiti o Pihopa Pomaparia. And their intention was to bring the remains of Bishop Pompalia back to New Zealand. And they had several meetings, and the journey got as far as the Diocesan Māori Pastoral Council in 1978. But at that time, it didn't. It just lay. In 1978, there was a festival of faith held here. And in that program, there was a play, The Coming of Bishop Pompalia. And as Joan Daniels, one of the kaitiaki here, will tell you, the children thought it was only a play, or those young people, but now the reality has become, you know, they realised it wasn't just a play, but it was telling them the story of the journey of Bishop Pombalia and his influence here. Later on, in about 1988, Bishop Father John Eaves and Father Henry Tate from here met up, and they started sharing the story. There was a group went over, and Pa Henry told Bishop, "You know how you said the people, you said to the people at Mangaka here, I don't know about your love for me, but I know about my love for you, because I've left my family, my home, and my country for you. Are you prepared once again to leave those people for the people you said you loved? Because next time I come, I'm coming to bring you home." And so the journey and the plans and the questions were asked of the French, his family, and of the French church, and of the French President Jacques Chirac.
Yes, no, that's very interesting. So he came back to New Zealand. They actually flew him back, you said. And so where did he actually land? And I think, wasn't he taken around to a lot of churches and all that? They had quite a ceremony, didn't they?
Permissions from his family, the French cardinal, who was Cardinal Lustiger, and also President Chirac, had been granted. Then the Church in New Zealand had to decide where Bishop would lie. And so there were many discussions, perhaps Auckland. In Auckland, there was already a bishop buried there in the cathedral there. So various groups from around Hokianga put in their request for the remains of Bishop Pompalia to lie here, because first of all, it was thought to the point where Bishop had said his first Mass. And then Pūrākau, where the first mission, long-term mission was. It's not the first mission, but the first long-term mission, which lasted from 1839 till 1915. So those two places didn't eventuate. But then several of the other areas came forward and asked for Bishop Pompalia and gave their reasons. Mojiti turned up to the meeting, and Pa Henry didn't realise, who is from here, didn't realise that his whānau had come to ask. And so he stopped the meeting and said that he would stand aside because he didn't know that his whānau were coming to ask for the remains of Bishop Pompalia. And so the meeting went on, and some of the places decided to pull out their names. And eventually it came to two places, Motukaraka on the Hokianga Harbour, and then also to Motiti. So then the bishop asked for the pros and cons of both places to be presented. And finally he made the decision of where Bishop Pombalia's remains should lie. And that result was brought to a meeting at Ngāti Manawa on the 17th of March 2001. And there the answer was given that the bishop was to lie in Motiti. So that was part happened before the journey began. Then eventually 37 people, including Bishop Pat Dunn from the Diocese of Auckland, accompanied the other 36 people to, first of all, to Rome, where we acknowledged that the Pope had initially asked Bishop to come to accompany the Marist Fathers who were setting up a mission in the South Pacific, in the Western South Pacific. Then we travelled to France, and on the 8th or the 9th of January, the bishop was disinterred, and we had an evening mass in Notre Dame Cathedral there. And then the following day, we journeyed back to New Zealand. And the bishop was received at Whaiora-Marae, and from there the journey began, journeying around the country to places that the bishop had visited and where people requested that he spend some time before his eventual interment in Motiti on the 20th of April 2002.
Well, thank you, sister. That was wonderful. I can't think of a more peaceful place for the bishop to be here. It's absolutely beautiful here this morning. The sun is shining, and it's just so lovely and peaceful. So thank you very much, sister, for telling us all about that. And thank you, listeners, for listening to us. I hope it's been of interest to you. Thank you. I would like to finish this program with a lovely Māori hymn which Bishop Pompalia wrote the words to. It is called Mo Maria and is sung by Delma Ray.
Program today, listen every second Wednesday of the month at 2:10 p.m. or download us anytime online at planetaudio.org.nz/DecoRetro. And we would like to thank our sponsors, Club Modern, Art Deco Society Auckland. We will keep you informed of all future exciting and glamorous events to be held by Club Modern. For more information, email judith.moore650@gmail.com. That's judith.moore650@gmail.com. Bye for now.